The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt Boone
Media Productions.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why.
We having fun, yeah.
Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Hey, what's up, guys? It is Robbie E., and welcome to another episode of Why It Ended with myself and my co-host, Matt Coon. Matt, what is going on, bro?
A whole bunch, Robbie. How are you doing, man?
I am doing good. I'm still feeling the aftermath of the Chris Harris episode last week.
Wow, what a show. Not every show is super happy. I think people love the show. And one thing I liked about the show was we got Twitter feedback saying, I didn't know who Chris Harris was until I heard the show. So we're actually bringing listeners to wrestlers they've never heard of before, which is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, well, you got to think, I guess a lot of people only ever watched WWE in their life and they didn't know about his whole TNA career. And hopefully they're checking that out now.
And I thought it was a great episode. Did you get a lot of good feedback from Chris Harris?
Oh, my God. He loved it. He's super happy. He's getting tweets. His Twitter's blown up. He's getting followers. And he's got like a whole new second wind in life now, man.
We're getting a second wind here on Why It Ended. We've caught off to a fantastic start, and it's only going to get better. But we want you to do us a favor. Go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if you do us a favor, we're going to do you a favor. Because once we get 500 subscribers, what do they get, Robbie?
They get a free special episode that has never been aired before.
A bonus show. So that's in addition to our regular shows. You are going to get a bonus show. All you got to do is go to YouTube and search Why It Ended with Robbie E. and subscribe. We're going to have exclusive stuff on there that's not on the podcast. I don't know if any other podcasts are doing that. Plus, past episodes are archives. And it's just a great thing to do. Robbie, what else you got going on these days?
Well, this weekend is WrestleMania weekend, so I'm pretty sure everyone in the world is going to be in NOLA, including you, right, Matt? You're going to be there?
Absolutely.
Which was the reason that I didn't want to be there, because I didn't want to be anywhere near you. And, no, I'm just kidding. But, you know, those weekends are so crazy. And as much as I would love to see everyone, all the fans and a lot of guys I haven't seen in a while, I'm actually kind of happy to be away from all the madness, and I'm actually going to be in Wyandotte. I think that's how you pronounce it. But it's outside. It's in the Detroit area, Michigan, for a DSW, Detroit style wrestling show this Saturday. And that is April 7th.
And I think you've got a lot of stuff going on. You've got a seminar, you've got a show, and you're going to go ahead and take a pass on the WrestleMania weekend.
I am. Yeah, I'm going to be teaching a seminar and doing some shows out there. And yeah, I'm taking a pass on Mania weekend, getting away from the craziness. And this way I could kind of get home a day earlier and be with my fam, because, dude, I'm too old for those for New Orleans. I can't do it anymore. I'll end up passed out in the street somewhere. I'm 34 now, man. I can't. I'm a dad. I have twins. I can't do that.
Well, speaking of craziness and maybe even passed out on the floor, we have our best guest ever today. What are you looking forward to when we're going to talk to Marcus Alexander Buff Bagwell?
Well, let me just say, I know when everyone is like hears his name, they think, oh, asshole or the bad attitude. And let me just say, I know him. Those things might be true. Those things may be true, but I know him very, very well. We spent a lot of time traveling together. I did a tour of Australia alone with him, where it was just me and him. So I got to know him very well. Let me just say that no matter what people think of this guy, I think he's a really cool dude. And there is a side to Marcus Buff Bagwell that a lot of people don't know. And I'm hoping they're going to get to see that side today on our episode.
Well, we're bound to see a lot of sides, and we're not going to take it easy on him. You know, we've all heard him tell the story many times about Jim Ross. So we're going to try to get a different angle on it, try to get deeper into it. And also, I'm not afraid of asking about Cowboys for Angels. Do you have any idea what Cowboys for Angels is, Robbie?
You know, I think I do, but I kind of want to hear you explain it anyway. And I really hope you've never used that website before, Matt.
Well, although I do get the impression that maybe some dudes do use the website, it is a website you can go to if you want to spend some time with a gentleman and pay by the hour. And it came to our attention through, of course, What Happened When podcast, that Buff Bagwell had a profile page on there. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, he will be asked about that. Coming up right after this, Buff Bagwell on Why It Ended. Why It Ended is being brought to you today by the Why It Ended YouTube channel. Go to YouTube and search Why It Ended with Robbie E. If we get 500 subscribers, you get a bonus show. And while you're sitting there listening to the show, after you're done subscribing to our YouTube channel, go ahead and go to iTunes, give us a review, and make sure to subscribe. We're trying to bring some great stuff to you. Please tell a friend and enjoy the show. All right. Well, we are joined by Buff Bagwell, known as Marcus Alexander Bagwell, but we all know him as Buff, and he is the stuff. How you doing today, Buff?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Hey, Buff, I think this is actually the first time me and you were going to talk since we hung out in Australia for almost a week.
We did have a blast, dude. We had a fun time.
Hey, man. So, I mean, you know, I know you're strapped for time, so we're going to get right into it, bro. Like, what, you know, just starting with questions. Obviously, the first one everyone always asks is, how did you discover professional wrestling?
I was 18 years old. Missy Hyatt saw me at the pool, is how I got into this business. I went down to a school and saw how much money there was to be made, and even found out that night I met Missy. Back to that, she sees me and has the agent move her in right next to me. And it's literally like straight ahead of me. So it's like across the hall directly, like I'm 1504, she's 1505. No shit. I think my numbers, believe it or not. And fucking, and so I come back from the pool and she's moving in. I'm thinking, that's fucking ironic. Well, she had told the girl, move me in wherever that motherfucker lives. Moved me in somewhere close to him. I didn't know that. Agent didn't know I was married. So she knocks on the door that night. Missy does. And she goes, and my wife's here, my first wife, Tanya. She said, you should be a wrestler. I go, that's those fucking guys don't make one. She goes, I don't know what's paying guys $100,000 a year. I said, let's re-talk this. What now?
Where do I train?
Tell me again the story. So I listened again. So she sent me down to actual school. Not many people know this story. I've been told, I don't think, ever. But she sent me to WCW school in Griffin, Georgia. And when she did, it was Jody Hamilton, Buddy Lee Sargent Parker, Kevin Nash, and a black guy. And that was the only people in this old, dirty, beaten down, middle of the summer, no air conditioning, hot, dirty building with the ring that looked like the most horrible thing you've ever seen in your life, even today. And Kevin was coming in as the Master Blaster. Mm-hmm. And so they come in and he was getting ready for that. So they're whispering. So I come back from that thing and I go, these motherfuckers are whispering about me and dogging me out and shit. She goes, no, that's they were talking about what they were going to do. You'll understand later, but long story short, $3,000, and I didn't have $3,000. So she found another guy named Steve the Brawler Lawler that charged me $1,500, trained me three times, and I was the TV champion with a ton of heat. Happened to be maybe a good body and a good pretty face. I'm as laid back in country and been in jail more than the whole locker room had been in jail. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But little they know, the little poor kid in the corner is really, really a troublemaking rebel. They just don't know it. So I had to play the role of Marcus Alexander Bagwell sitting on the corner and everybody hating my gut.
Well, you definitely made an impact right away when you came to WCW. Of course, you had some experience in Georgia and with Global, but you were a big baby face, teamed with the Patriot, Scotty Riggs, and Scorpio, and got tag team titles. In 1996, when the NWO invaded, you turned heel and turned with the NWO. What was that like to finally be maybe a little bit more of the real Marcus Bagwell?
The biggest thing in my 28-year career, the most remembered, I can tell you where it was, Salisbury, Maryland. I can tell you where I was sitting in the locker room. I can tell you how Kevin Nash walked up to ask me. Eric Bischoff wasn't a friend of mine. He really wasn't. He wasn't a big Mark Bagwell fan. That's a friend of mine. I love him to death. Back then, he was not a Mark Bagwell fan.
What was the reason for that? Why wasn't he?
I don't know. But see, Kevin had seen me in the bars and the clubs and knocking guys out and, you know, having a shot and doing a line and doing what, you know what I'm saying?
Being the crazy Buff Bagwell from Australia.
Yeah. The Buff out of the box, they had seen, Kevin had seen. And Eric has seen Marcus Alexander Bagwell.
Yeah.
So finally, when we meet in the, we're meeting a club, we're talking, and he congratulates me and all that night after it's over. And he goes, what's up, Fagwell, or something to do with fag, which every good looking guy's gone through in their life being called a fag. And of course the voice popped. And as soon as the pop settled down, I said, how's it feel for a fag to get more pussy than you get?
That's a turnaround.
Hey, and from that point on, we were best friends, dude. He took care of me. I signed a $1.1 million contract in the hospital bed.
Well, you were in the hospital bed because of a match with the Steiners where you took that bulldog off the top rope. And you came back and you did one of a couple really memorable swerves where you really had the whole audience, myself included, fooled by thinking that you were crying and you were going to be a good guy again and you turned. Do you think there's an opportunity there maybe to turn your face again so that you could take advantage of the push you got with the NWO?
To answer your question, I mean, like, if you asked my father that question right this second, he wouldn't be able to answer without crying. It affected my whole family, the fan mail and stuff we got from my broke neck. Right. They read all these letters, saw all this love, all this passion, these fans. And they were fighter pilot before they went into battle at Desert Storm and things like that. Letters like that they would tell me about. And when Eric decided to turn me heel, it was a bad decision. Marcus Bagwell just broke his neck on live television. What are we doing? We turn him babyface, and you got a rock on your hands. And a possibility of another star, you know?
I mean, it's such an inspirational story. I don't see why everyone in the world wouldn't want to get behind you, you know?
And whether baby or heel, they blew the whole thing off. My first match back, I get beat with a bulldog. I look at Kevin, I said, Kevin, I don't mind getting beat. I said, but I can't take the bulldog. I just got paralyzed 10 months ago taking it. It scares me. He goes, so we figured out a way. If you ever watch the match, I feed into him. He comes off with a different shoulder for some reason. I guess he turns him around too. So we just collide. We just collide like two idiots in front of 40,000 sold out at the Indo on main event Nitro. So I lose my first match back from a broken neck that really
happened. You know, it's crazy. And now, after getting to know you more, I feel like when you heard that, you would have just said, no, hell no, that makes no sense. I'm not doing that, you know?
And guess how many times I said that?
About 500?
I swear to God on my life, never. On Jesus Christ, Lord, my Savior, let me die tonight of a heart attack. I've never said no. The Sandman, I just told this story to Johnny Sandman yesterday because we was on the road together. The Sandman came in and they asked me to do a job for Sandman. I remember going to Eric and going, dude, I don't mind, but you're going to have to explain this one to me. Here I am, Buff back one of your main players, and we got a fucking crackhead with a stick and a Budweiser can that you're getting ready to put over and put ECW over and everything else. Tell me what I'm fucking missing. I mean, I came at it wrong. You know what?
Guys, you were going off the rails a little bit. We're going to be here all day if we don't get to what we want to talk about, what everybody wants to hear about. Now, Buff, you have done a lot of interviews, and we've heard the story, and I think we just want to go a little bit deeper. Basically, you knew WCW was in trouble. You get there one day, the trucks are there, you meet Shane, you get signed to come over with 11 other superstars. The top tier guys were you, Booker, and DDP. And then you go to a training where you had to train to become a WWE superstar. You got in a little bit of trouble, got in a fight with Shane Helms, and maybe covered it up, maybe thought that had something to do with it. But let's talk about it. The infamous Monday Night Raw main event against Booker T. They had you do this match in Tacoma, Washington, the week before Raw was going to be in Atlanta, which of course would be friendly territory for WCW. But there's other stuff going on that was weird too. According to what I've heard from you, Johnny Ace and Pat Patterson had some miscommunications and you weren't told any kind of finish. And they brought in Stacy Keibler to ring announce, and she is not there to ring announce. They brought Arn Anderson as a commentator who's never commentated. And by and large, it was an exhibition with no backstory. It seems like it was set up to fail no matter how you guys did out there.
Absolutely, it was. It was really set up poorly. But like you just said, everything you could say. Now, take everything you just said and imagine my music comes on. Shane grabs me and goes, "We don't look in the camera here." And I said, "Have you ever watched me fucking wrestle?" I said, "That's all I do, brother, is pose, look in the camera." He goes, "You can't look in the camera." So I've seen Booker T get booed, Stacy Keibler get booed, Arn Anderson and Scott Hudson get booed. I've seen Shane McMahon get booed, and I can't look in the camera? What the fuck is going on? So, I mean, literally my music's playing, "Go, go, 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 go." I mean, like that. I'm like, "You've got to be shitting me. If you ever watch that match back, you can just tell I'm not my typical buff like I normally do coming down the ramp. It's fucking Monday night. I walk straight to the ring and we fucking had an average match, but average at best. But people really shit on that match. I just didn't think it was that bad."
Well, there was into it like with a different mindset, like walking down the ramp and just all day backstage at WWE. Was it just different? Did you yourself not feel like buff anymore?
I definitely, now that I look back on it, I definitely needed somebody to talk to me and kick me out and get my confidence back. I had lost my confidence. And even when I watch it back, I'm surprised I'm as strong as I am when I watch it because of how hard that day was. I mean, I got people trying to, you know, calling me, texting me, trying to send them signs because I'm going to be on Raw. And so me and Booker the whole time are going, "Why in the fuck are we doing this, bro?" And so we knew there was something wrong and the whole thing felt wrong. The entire day did. So there was just more to it. You just, common sense, dude, forget all the rumors. Why do you forget all the rumors for a minute? Forget all of them. Just why would you put that match on a week before Atlanta? If you put that in Atlanta, you got a chance of making a little hit. We came out to Tacoma and got booed out of the building, dude.
Why not run an angle with you that week in Tacoma and then have the payoff in Atlanta so you and Booker at least have a reason to be fighting?
Sure, anything, dude. They throw us both out the back door. Okay, what does that mean? That means exactly what it meant. We're fucking done. You know, it was over, dude. Ed Patterson and Johnny Laurinaitis, Booker started the hint like I was a step off a little bit that night. Just started a hint, and I said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, wait a minute now, brother." I said, "Booker, me and you have got 1,000 matches. Think about it, brother, with Scorpio, Males, the Stripes. I mean, and every time I worked with Booker, not Stevie, I've always put my other guy with Steve, you know, it's because me and Booker could move better. But we never missed a step in years. That's not it." So when it started going there, I go, "Come on, Book, are you really going to go there?" The only person that talked to us was Steve Austin, which he was God to us. So we did what Steve Austin said, you know, and he said, "We're going to come down. We're going to beat you up. You join in, Buff, help out. We'll throw Booker out, and then we'll throw you out too." I said, "Got it." You know, so we did it.
Don't you think that's a little shady, though, that they just both had a mix-up and forgot to go over the finish with you guys, you know?
Like I said, the whole thing is just ridiculous. Keep in mind, then I get a call from Thursday that I can never prove, which that's bravo on their part. Jim Ross calls me on a Thursday and goes, hey, you're totally off on the weekend.
Well, everyone wants us to get into the Jim Ross thing, and we will a little bit. I've heard you make mention of Jim Ross's roundtable appearance on Heat Seekers.
That's the big one.
I'm going to read to you what Jim Ross says on that. And so, as you
said, hold on, before you say what you're going to say, though, on Steve Austin's podcast, he said he had nothing against me. He was just delivering. He was just the bearer of bad news. And if he at that roundtable that you're getting ready to read would say, you know what? I like that Marcus Bagley kid. He was a good kid. We talked a lot about football, and he was a local kid. And I like him. But I did have to let him know he got fired, and I hate that. You know, that would be fantastic. But go ahead and read what he really fucking said.
He said, I'm on the phone one day, and it's Judy Bagwell. That's Marcus's mother. Well, Buff is booked for the weekend, but he can't work. And then Jim Ross goes on to say, it's like I'm the PE teacher in ninth grade. I said, what's wrong with him? She said he was hurt. He would make TV, but he would miss all the weekend bookings. Jim Ross says, well, we'll replace him. That will be easy to do. Jim Ross also said that he told your mother, he's a man and he should be calling me, not you. I saw Marcus Monday and I said, your mother will never call me again unless she wants to say happy birthday or Merry Christmas or Happy Hanukkah or whatever. So you're saying that not only did the conversation with Jim Ross, your mother never happened. Jim Ross never talked to you about that conversation.
I got one. I swear to God, I hope my entire family dies in the next 30 seconds of the most horrible disease. Everything you just said was a lie. Everything you said, bro, that's the honest to God truth. I was trying to listen to one part that may be true or that was the lies and realize I was having to listen to what may be true in a second. There was none of that story true. That's the honest to God truth. And it's just, like I said, every time they go into the mother thing, I go, let's go this route. Even if your mother, let's say she fucking did call. Let's say she did it. So what? Tell your mother not to call me back, well, you fucking idiot. But who has their mother call the WWF to cancel the show? I mean, it's just ridiculous, dude. It's so pathetic. But he went right around and said, oh, at Steve Austin's podcast, he was like, well, I like Mark so much. He's an excellent, excellent talent. And I can't remember verbatim, but he just puts me over. Steve needed to have those words right then, and then finally Jim would have been fucked. But he can't. Nobody ever pushes him to the limit, because they let him off the hook too soon because Jim's friends with Steve. I even asked Steve before I started talking about him. I said, do you mind? I said, because I go there, I'm going there, bro. I said, he's cost me millions, brother. Millions. I said, I hate his fucking guts.
Have you ever seen him since?
No, but I don't know what I would do if I saw him. I think I'd attack him. I think.
If looking at it... Looking,
I mean, just fucking guts, dude. I mean, bro, listen to me. If I would have made a quarter of what I was making for half of the years, it's 8 or 9 million. I mean, it's millions he's cost me, brother, and a career.
So, taking it to not past the time that you were given your release, of course, not fired, but given your release, taking you to the end of the match on Raw. How much responsibility do you take on, and what could you have done differently? Was there anything you could have done, or were you just screwed from the beginning?
Honest to God, the only way I'm able to survive, and I've said this lately a lot, I don't know why, but the only way I'm able to live and push on at all is I have no regrets.
Do you regret getting in the industry?
I almost said yes. I almost out of my. I know I'd do it again. I definitely would do it again. So There's no regrets there either. I really would. I'd do it again, from the surgeries to where I'm sitting in this chair right now. It still bought me a 11-year unbelievable life and a 28-year where I paid my bills, bro.
And I remember how, you know, when I was with you, a few of the times you always say, and it's something I think a lot of people are going to be thinking when they hear this podcast. And I think a lot of people are already saying it anyway, just, you never would have thought that Buff Bagwell's career would have ended at 31. It's insane.
Think about it, bro. Listen to me. And I got fired in Atlanta.
Yeah. It's just, it's insane.
I had to call my parents to come home. I mean, dude, can you imagine? If you're sitting, if you're Robbie E and you're in a WWF locker room and it goes through the Phillips Arena and it crosses your plate that Buff Bagwell just got fired, that's a big deal, Robbie. That's a big fucking deal. And you know what it did? It made everybody in that fucking locker room straighten up, quit arguing and bitching. I was a sacrificial lamb for Vince, and I'm not sure if that was the reason or not. I still don't know why I got fired. I was never told. But still, I think it shook everybody up enough to go, look, guys, nobody's safe. They just fired Buff fucking Bagwell, you know, 10 minutes ago in Atlanta.
They told you in person?
It took me 10 minutes to catch on, but yes. Because I've never had a job before. All I've ever done is wrestled. So I'm fucking listening to him talk. I'm thinking, you sure are kind of talking negative. I'm like, so I raised my hand trying to be nice. And I said, what, am I getting fired? And just like that, Jim goes, no, we're going to release you. And now I'm trying to swallow the fact that he just told me we're not going to fire me. They're going to release me. As soon as he started trying to explain that to me, I said, try not to cry, start shaking hands, and keep smiling, and get out as fast as you can. And that's what I did.
So if the Jim Ross thing is a lie, that is a made-up story. If that is the case, then it's either there's a reason why Jim Ross would lie, or there's a reason that he was told to put that story out there. What was in it to get rid of Marcus Bagwell?
I'd like to think that at least there's a reason that I've made up what I said a minute ago about the locker room. The locker room was chaos, bro. Every time I left, my top hat got crushed in. I mean, it was a top A locker room that was ready to go off. And, you know, I mean, at one time I got up and crushed my own top hat in. And when I came back, it was fixed. I mean, these are the big boys. This is the, we're playing big ball, you know, and I'm like, and I'm not winning. We're playing big ball and I ain't winning, bro.
Was there anybody who reached out and was nice to you at all? Any WWE talent or upper that reached out to you?
Nobody. Nobody pulled me to the side. Nobody. They gave me matches me and Stunning Steve Austin had. A million, dude. And good ones. And I didn't get not one top guy or even a middle quarter, nobody. Just the thing that I think finally buried me one day, but it was a no-win situation. And I've never heard about this. I've never talked about it on a podcast before, but I'll tell you something I've never talked about before. And that is Vince had a meeting during that 2 or 3 weeks I was there only, but the meeting was just with the 12 guys. And he said, listen, he goes, I know a lot's going on. He said, but listen to me. He goes, we want you to be yourself. Don't try to ad lib and be something you're not. If just be yourselves. That's all we ask. So the guys that usually go to the ring and hit the ropes and do all that, they go to do that, right? Well, I don't do that. So I can get in the ring with these guys that know I don't do this normally, or I can go sit in up in the stands and watch them and get a ton of heat. So I didn't know what to do. I said, if I go in the seats, I'm going to get heat. And if I get in the ring, the guys are going to be like, what the fuck are you doing in here? You're just back there playing cards, drinking a beer or something. You know? Why are you doing it in the ring? Checking it out today all of a sudden. So I stuck to what Vince said. Be yourself. So myself was, I sat and checked my phone out during that time of the day.
Was that your only interaction with Vince? Did you have any other meetings with him?
He threw me in early before he owned WCW. And did the old story you've heard a thousand times probably, but he flies you and your wife in, he picks you up in a limo, he takes you to the house, they cook dinner, and then they hire you. That's the big boy story of Vince.
If you this is while that. You were under contract at WCW?
Yes. So it was a big deal. So I fly, the only thing that wasn't done, besides what everything I just said, we met at a Holiday Inn Express ballroom. It was just us in the middle of this, you know, gigantic room, but he couldn't do the house thing. So I said, Vince, I don't mind that. I said, I just wanted to meet you and shake your hand and say hello. And he asked me a few questions. He said, what's your opinion about the business? I said, yay or boo? He goes, what do you mean? I said, either you got to get yay or boo. I said, one or the other. I said, if you don't get one or the other, you're not doing your job. He goes, we're going to get along just fine. And we high-fived and hugged and all that. And me and my wife caught a flight home. We're golden, right? He buys the company. So I become Buff Bagwell to, what was your name again? And I lost my leverage.
Are you resentful that you wrestled with people like Undertaker and Steve Austin and Mick Foley in WCW, you come over to WWE and nobody comes over to you and says hello?
The only thing I'm actually, I think, resentful for is this business is a pretty, pretty unforgiving business. I mean, pretty forgiving business, I think. Hollywood's very unforgiving, we know, but wrestling's not as unforgiving, but still, really go back like Robbie said a minute ago, my career was over at 31, brother. I had 10 good years left. I mean, top of the notch, 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. And they let me go like it was nothing. Nothing. And everybody was like, wow. So, I don't know why. That's just how it came down, dude. But, you know.
And I've heard the story that Jim Ross told you to call back in 3 months. You called back in 3 months and a week. And he answered the phone, what do you want, Mark? And then you said, I'm calling because you said to call. And he said, we'll call you if we need you. And my question to you is, do you think there's anything different you could have done after your release to maybe get yourself back in the good graces of Vince and the World Wrestling Entertainment?
I did everything that I thought I could do. I called without being a pest, which is about once every 4 months. I think I called, and that was just at first. You know, I'd call like every 4 or 5 months. I'd call. You know?
When was the last time you called him?
Oh God, it's been 10 years probably. I mean, I'd say over 10, but definitely 10.
How was Jim when you called? Was he rude to you or?
Old as ice. He even took a breath. I'll never forget. He went, hello. And then I went, oh my God, I'm in trouble. Hey, Mark. And I was like, hey, man. I said, Jim, just first thing I said out of the gate because he was so negative was, I'm only calling because you guys told me to call. I'm doing my job. You guys asked me to call in 3 months. I waited a little longer, so there wasn't heat for that. And I'm still getting heat from you, Jim. He goes, Mark, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. We'll call you if you need you. And that was it, Jack.
Was the conversation, I know you said it was cold, but did you get riled up at all in talking to him on the phone at all?
Oh, no, this is literally, I mean, maybe on, as I just repeated it, I would honest to God think maybe it was a 20, 25 second conversation tops. I mean, it was no riled up. It was, but I did want to clarify and clear the air because of the breath. I wanted him to know nicely. I said, Jim, just so you know, I'm just calling because you guys told me to. And he goes, I know. You know, but that's how it really went down. But I mean, literally, I wasn't going to go, oh, hey, Jim, and act like I didn't hear him fucking sigh. I cleared the sigh up and let him know. And that's the kind of heat I got. Maybe that's the reason I got the heat I got. But I can't let a grown human, take a deep breath before they answer the phone and not go, are you okay? Or am I bothering you? Is this a bad time? Should I call back or something, right? So the big deep sigh, and I say, hey, I'm just calling you back because you guys told me to. And he acted like he knew exactly what I was talking about. He said, yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Just kind of blew it off and fucking got me off that phone, dude. It wasn't probably 15 seconds.
Now, of course, you did some TNA stuff. You've been on the indie scene. But we know that your career in the big spotlight, the big dream, the big show, ended at the age of 31. If you were to put it in a sentence or two, why?
Why did it end at 31?
Yeah. If you were to describe it, what is your...
I can answer in one word. Computers.
What do you mean?
I think...
The perception that the internet gave you?
They started reading the internet stuff of who I was, and it wasn't really who I was. I mean, my own parents started believing what they were hearing, and then my mother went on the road with this as part of the talent, and she was getting me heat because she saw that her baby wasn't doing nothing wrong. So she started pointing people out that were late. I'm over there covering her fucking mouth because she really sees that her boy ain't doing nothing wrong. I'm really showing up on time, being a good person, doing the right thing. Yes, sir. No, sir. And she sees it. So she actually gets mad. And I go, mother, you got to shut the fuck up. I said, that's going to get heat on me, you know? Keep in mind, though, she was like the world champion at the time. So it was ridiculous. The whole thing was, this is what was going on, you know?
Well, dude, as much as like I could listen to 100 of your stories, only because we're running out of time to get to it. So in 2018, what is Buff Bagwell doing now? And like, what's your future look like in wrestling?
2018, bro, I have about 80% recovered from my hip replacement. A second one on my left. I had to get done twice. Too long of a story to tell, but two hip replacements for one hip. Shoulder, same thing, right shoulder, two shoulder replacements. But at the gym today is the first time, and I've only been in the gym solid for 3 weeks. Before that, it was allergic stuff, all that shit, getting allergic to things, sick, kidney collapse, I don't know, all kind of shit. But regardless, I went to the mirror today for the first time in 3 weeks and was like, okay. I could kind of see, you know, because I don't look sickly. I'm 230. But I need to be 220, you know. I'm just a little too big, but I can't. I just, being older like this, it's hard, bro. I've tried. It's tough. But I have noticed a difference the last 3 or 4 days.
And you actively are still taking bookings, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I get my number out before on Skype so many times. But everybody, I'm easy to reach, bro. But but my Instagram is Facebook is Marcus Buff Bagwell. And then, hey, Judy. Facebook may be just Marcus Bagwell. Twitter's Mark Buff Bagwell. Instagram is Marcus Buff Bagwell. And I get confused on freaking Facebook. I need to know what that is. I think it's just Marcus Bagwell. But I got a ball cap on. But there's like 40 of them, dude. It's ridiculous. I sent one of those out to them, but they don't, you know, it's not no law. They can keep being me if they want to be me.
Well, we'll add all this to the post and tag you and everything.
Long story short, dude, I did a movie with John Schneider that came out this past year, so hoping for more movies coming up in 2018. There's a few on the table I'm talking to. The phone's been ringing good, which is a little bit, you know, surprising because of the shoulder and the hip, but I'm really, really coming out of this, coming back to 100%, feel good. So fully taking bookings. I'm still buff and I'm still the stuff, bro. It's just, I'm getting ready to do a show called The It Factor. And how I explain when people go, well, what is the It Factor? What is it? I go, me. Me, motherfucker.
and you're going to be, the show's going to drop on the Wednesday before WrestleMania. You're going to be around WrestleMania weekend. Is that right, Buff?
Yeah, I got it wrote down here. April 6th, Friday, I'm at Shenanigans with Kevin Nash. April 7th and 8th, I'm in Holden at John Schneider's. It's a big deal, man. It's called John Schneider's Extravaganza. It's a big deal. It's in Holden, Louisiana. They're having like a General Lee Dukes of Hazzard car race. And it's a big deal. I'm racing one of the cars. He's doing a car jump.
Well, what could go wrong?
Yeah, right. There's a bunch of shit that can go wrong here. American Saloon in New Orleans, 1200 Decatur Street, Sunday at April 8th from 4:30 to 10:30. That's I'll be there also. American Sports Saloon, New Orleans, 1200 Decatur Street, 4:30 to 10:30. But I'll be there and come out and check it out, man. Love to see you guys.
Definitely. And we have some quick questions from our Twitter followers, if you don't mind. Once we posted you were going to be on the show, there's a bunch of questions. If you don't mind answering a few real quick there, Buff. If we have question about the Hurricane Helms fight real quick. If you would have ratted out Hurricane Helms out about the fight, do you think you still would be in the WWE? Is covering up that incident maybe the door closing on your career there?
I really have thought about, you know, that fight. I'm sure let's just be honest. I mean, I really, really think that had nothing to do with none of it. But it gave them another, I think we were fired in Tacoma. I think the whole thing was done in Tacoma. I think even before the show, I think when he bought our company, we were done. Let's go that route. I really do. There's no reason in the world, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, or 5 million, or $50 to buy a company and go on air live for the first time 5,000 miles away from where the company's from.
Well, I'm going to ask you this because I've done some work for Tony Schiavone on his podcast, and they've had a little bit of fun with your Cowboys for Angels profile on there. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is that a legit thing? And how do you feel about people knowing about that and maybe making fun of it a little bit?
Oh, I don't care at all. I don't bother. Like I said, I'm always me, so it doesn't matter. How that came about was I had a car wreck, and my phone quit ringing because computers, back to that word, you know, I was dead. I was broke. I was dead, but, you know, not dead dead. Apparently. So I called my manager up and I said, buddy, so we're at that stage. He goes, what stage? I said, whatever it takes. And before I could even get off the phone with him, he goes, dude, there's a show on TV called Cowboys Rangers. I mean, called Gigolos, you'd be perfect for. So Judy, my wife, comes in here, pulls it up online. She looks at it, takes a look at it. Looks like, you know, okay, that's right up his alley, you know. I get there, dude. It's way, way more than we thought. So, well, and my wife had to pick me up from the airport. So I land with a $20,000 check, and I go, I got good news, I got bad news. Well, what's the good news? So the good news is, yeah, so the $20,000 check, and oh my God, then get our bills caught up. What's the bad news? I said, you're going to see me fuck somebody in 2 weeks on Showtime.
Jesus Christ.
She goes, I mean, did you fuck her? And I go, actually, no. I said, if the camera could have saw my dick, it was about an inch long. I got real close to her, and you act like you're fucking. I tell this story, I'm telling y'all right now, when Gigolos was running, Showtime called me and cussed me. They go, dude, this is a reality show. You can't tell them you're not really fucking. And so I said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I was trying to protect my wife a little bit, you know? and a little bit, you know, from us getting kind of not knowing how deep it was. But
literally,
but that is, I literally, yeah, how deep it was. I went to the owner after it. This is a true story. The guy that started it, and his name is Garen. I went to Garen and I said, bro, I said, I am so sorry. I could fuck her. He goes, what? I go, what am I supposed to fuck her? He goes, no. And I go, well, nobody fucking told me. I said, I didn't know, dude. So they're kind of like the boys there too. You know, nobody's going to smart me up. And I was the new kid and all that, you know? So, it had the highest rated show in 5 years. And then I signed a $240,000 contract and they didn't pick up season 6.
So the website cowboysforangels.com, that's not like really a legit thing where someone could actually order your services.
It's totally real.
So that's been an income stream for you?
No, it's not, but you asked if it was a real website. Yes, it is. But I don't think I'm even on there anymore. I don't think. If I am, I'd be shocked. But no, that's never been an income for me. I did the show only. But you can, and I'm not sure what I would do if they called. I'd talk to my wife and go, look, I mean, you want to make 10 grand? I mean, I can make 10 grand doing this. I mean, that sounds horrible, but 10 grand is a lot of money, dude. I don't know. I probably would ask her, but she'd tell me, go kill myself, probably, but I'd ask her. So, but yes, that is a legitimate website you go to and you hire people, gigolos, for service. You go out to dinner, to proms, to whatever.
All right, and then there's one more Twitter question. It's from @fanboystww, and he is asking, what was the situation where you shot your father?
That's a long one. I'll make it short. Parents going broke, 1988, house is coming unglued, mom's at the store trying to save it, but it's going down. The Bagwell family is completely disarray. Finally, one day, mom and dad are in a fight. I come downstairs, break them up, pull dad off of her. And I was, you know, 17 years old, 18 years old, I think, at this stage. And I kind of, you know, I was able to kind of get dad off of her pretty quick. Overpowered him. He gets the gun, comes back, does the, hey, so come on, big man. So you make a move now. I said, yeah, come on, man. Fuck. I said, this is ridiculous. Put the fucking gun down. There's been all of a sudden, doorbell rings. I'm like, you gotta be kidding. So he grabs my mom and like shoves her head, like, go get the door. Go get the door. So I fucking go at him. And he fucking turns back around with a gun, like, oh, come on, motherfucker, come on. I go, put the fucking gun down, motherfucker. I'll kick your ass. Yeah. And he's like, no, come on, see how big. I said, big and bad you are right now. Come on. So finally he says, go get the fucking keys, nobody's leaving. This is zero alcohol, zero drugs. This is a Bagwell fight. Okay. I go outside. He's out of the cars, all of his cars. As he told me, his cars, which they were his cars. I get all the keys. Oh, when I'm outside getting the keys up, the mom is trying to leave because she knows if she can just leave and get out of there, me and him will probably talk and work it out. Keep in mind, it's zero alcohol, zero drugs. This is just a Bagwell fight. Okay? So she's trying to leave. Well, he comes out, shoots both front tires out of the car, and drags my mother out of the window while the Summit Cable guy and me watched. And I didn't know this was possible, but I literally blacked out. I've had a blackout from drugs, but I've never had a blackout at 18 when I didn't know what a pill or beer was. I do not remember running into the house at all right this second as I sit here. I do not remember running in the house, but I passed the refrigerator for some reason, like I said, that had been there for 13 years or been a gun there. And I go to his closet. He lives in a big, gigantic ranch house, like an 8,000 square foot ranch. And I get his gun out of his closet. And when you come back outside, he was now at his car and he was trying to open the door with his left hand. And the gun is low enough by my side that the shrubs, he can't see I got a gun yet. Now, at this stage, I remember all this. I'm back. I remember, like, stepping onto the, you know, stepping outside and seeing him. So I remember all of this as I say it. And I said, hey, motherfucker. He looked up at me and I said, you want to pop some caps? Because that was, you know, that was the stand. And that was kind of cool back then. So that's what he would always say. So I said, you want to pop some caps, motherfucker? And he's like, huh? And I raised the gun up. And it seemed like 5 minutes went by, bro. And I was aiming at the windshield. I was like, boom. I said, just blow the windshield out. Boom. It seems like a 5 minute ordeal. Boom. By the third shot, I said, kill him. Just fucking kill him, dude. Get it over. Put the gun right on into the final two. Boom. Boom. I see his arm go down. He goes behind the truck real fast. Well, keep in mind, I hate to say it for the third time, but still, this is a bad wolf fight. I come back inside, lock the door, I go get my fucking gun. Now I go get my 45 automatic, put one in it. My best friend is in the bathtub rocking. He's so scared. He's like rocking back and forth. And I'm going on some kind of like Scarface rant, like, come on, motherfucker, you want to fuck with me? Come on, motherfucker. You know, and I got my best friends rocking in the bathtub. It's like something out of a movie, dude. I come back downstairs and fucking somebody's knocking at the door. And I don't know why I didn't look, but I opened the door with a gun real quick and it was mom. And mom goes, you shot your father. I go, you crazy fucking bitch. I go, he beats you up. He pulls you out of the fucking car. And you're worried about me shooting fucking dad. So she comes in to call the ambulance and all that. Well, I walk over, pick up the phone, and go, I call my brother. He goes, Bagwell drywall. I said, y'all get over here. I shot dad. And he goes, what? I said, just get over here. All right. So I'm on the phone up. Keep in mind, Summit cable guy sees all of this. But it's, I think, kind of before cell phone. Pretty sure there's no cell phones yet. So, but he gets on his, you know, gets on his CB, calls his place, I'm sure. Cocaine police, there's 20 cars there at the back house. My dad owned Marietta. So Cocaine police from everywhere, dude. And I'm at the top of the steps listening, but before they got there, I was able to go out and see him. He was holding his left arm. I didn't want to cry. I remember not wanting to cry. And I said, and I got my 45 automatic in my hand, cock loaded one in it. And it's cocked. I said, motherfucker, I said, you have fucking tortured me the last 2 fucking months. And just like stone ice, he goes, look, bro, if you don't mind, I've been shot. I said, motherfucker, I didn't want to cry. And I started crying. And I said, I hope you bleed to death right where the fuck you're standing. So that's me and my dad are best friends to this day.
Well, Buff Bagwell, you are the best guest in the history of the world. Thank you so much for being here. I'm glad you guys made up. And Robbie, I think we've heard it all. And I think this might be the greatest podcast in the history of podcasting. Buff Bagwell, you are the best guest in the history of the world. Thank you so much for being here.
You, bro.
Hey, dude, thank you for doing this, man.
No problem, brother.
Well, Robbie, what did you think about that?
Well, sometimes I forget that we're allowed to curse. I try to hold back a lot and I try to be a more reserved Robbie E while we're doing this thing. But holy fuck. I mean, like, what just happened? What did we just get ourselves into? I don't know what I'm feeling right now, man. That is... Let me just say, now I get why Buff is this stuff, because I told you how I knew that other side of him, but I just learned about 10 new things that I didn't even freaking know, man. He's a lunatic and I love him. I want to be him.
Look, man, I just wanted to do a podcast about like wrestlers, like stop wrestling. And I heard about Showtime fucking and shooting your dad with a gun.
And and crackheads.
did he call the Sandman a crackhead, or did I dream that?
I believe he did, but afterwards he did say that he gets along with them, so maybe he didn't mean anything by it. I don't know, but to me, a crackhead's a crackhead. But
well, if you enjoyed this show, if you enjoyed everything you heard, please tweet everybody. Let everybody know our podcast is blowing up, and we want you to be a big part of it. And also, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Is there anything else you want to say as a follow-up? I think we know why it ended, right?
I'm pretty sure everyone in the world, after hearing that, knows why it ended.
Do you have a take on the Jim Ross story versus the Buff Bagwell story, or is it just one of those mysteries that will be there forever?
You know, as much as I love Buff, I believe him. I want to believe him. I believe him. Well, I think I believe.
It's a good thing you believe him, because he said if he was lying, everybody he loved would be killed in a gruesome manner. So I think he better be telling the truth.
Or does he not love anyone and he only loves himself? Although he's still alive, though. So
yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's Buff and he's the stuff. And this is another episode of Why It Ended. Please interact with us on Twitter. I'm at Matt Coon Music. You can interact with us at Why It Ended. And Robbie, how can people get a hold of you on Twitter and also for bookings?
For Twitter, at Robbie E. Impact, Instagram, at Real Robbie E., and then bookings, Robbie E. Bookings at gmail.com. And guys, remember, you're getting a bonus episode from us this week. All we got to do is get 500 YouTube subscribers. And believe me, it's going to be worth your while, because we're adding a lot of cool stuff to the YouTube channel in the near future.
Stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for a bonus show. And WrestleMania, here I come. And Detroit, here Robbie comes, on another episode of Why It Ended.
Computers.
The world of MLW Radio never stops.
Matt!
Boom! Media Productions. Computers.